This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Broadly speaking, President Macron wants the United Kingdom to really step up to the plate. He's been very annoyed with the United Kingdom holding back particularly help on terrorism and in particular on migration.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris. Full details on the story coming up.
Also, President Uhuru Kenyatta's spokesman warns opposition leader Raila Odinga not to carry through on threats to inaugurate himself as the people's president. And 48 former U.S. ambassadors to African countries have sent a letter to the White House expressing deep concern over President Donald Trump's reported derogatory comments referring to African nations.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, a spokesman for Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has warned opposition leader Raila Odinga not to carry through on threats to inaugurate himself as the people's president or to form a rival government in exile. Odinga, who disputes the October presidential election results, vowed to VOA's Swahili service this week he would conduct an inauguration ceremony on January 30th and form a government either inside or outside of Kenya. VOA's Daniel Scharf reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's presidential spokesman, Eric Kiraithe, on Thursday responded to opposition leader Raila Odinga's threat to form a government in exile with a warning.
Acts against the Kenyan law done either within or outside the country will be treated accordingly. We have systems to deal with actions. When done outside the country, they are treated as actions of aggression against Kenya. When done within the country, we have the criminal law.
Odinga's National Super Alliance has rejected the results of October's rerun election and defiantly pledged to inaugurate him as the people's president on January 30th. In an exclusive interview with VOA's Swahili service Tuesday, Odinga repeated the swearing-in plan and raised the possibility of forming a government. He said an illegitimate government is in office, but the people's government is out of office, and we will work as a government. We will appoint a cabinet. It can be a government in exile, that is, out of the country. It has happened in other countries, said Odinga. But us, we are saying Kenyans will not accept to be governed by an illegitimate government that wasn't voted for by the people. A press release from Odinga's political party, the Orange Democratic Movement, tried to walk back his comments on forming a government in exile. According to the ODM, Odinga said he would only take such a move if authorities tried to stop his swearing-in ceremony. VOA's Swahili service maintains the opposition leader made no such comments during the interview. The 73-year-old Odinga did hint that his inauguration plan could change if Kenyatta's ruling Jubilee Party agrees to talks.
If we cannot talk by 30th of October, of January, we are going to be sworn in. And we will then release our program thereafter.
Presidential spokesman Kiraithe on Thursday repeated that the president was open to dialogue on development issues such as land ownership, healthcare, and water, but not on the legitimacy of his government.
The dialogue the government has insisted on is that it must be based on the law and the constitution.
Odinga told VOA that he was not interested in talking to Kenyatta about his development agenda. Kenya was plunged into political crisis when the Supreme Court voided the August election results and Odinga and his supporters boycotted a second round in October. Kenyatta was declared the winner with 98% of the vote, but low voter turnout of 39% led many to question if he had a mandate to lead. Kenya's attorney general warned in December that if Odinga declares himself president, it could be considered treason, a charge punishable by death. Daniel Scherf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Forty-eight former U.S. ambassadors to African countries have sent a letter to the White House expressing deep concern over President Donald Trump's reported derogatory comments referring to African nations. In part, the letter said, as former U.S. ambassadors to 48 African countries, we write to express our deep concern regarding reports of your recent remarks about African countries and to attest to the importance of our partnerships with most of the 54 African nations. The letter went on to praise entrepreneurs, artists, activists, conservationists, and educators from the continent, while also stressing the importance of maintaining good relations between the United States and 54 African nations. And at a ceremony marking additional health care funding to Zimbabwe yesterday, the U.S. Ambassador to Zimbabwe, Harry Thomas Jr., said that the American people have tremendous respect for Zimbabwe, for Africa, its people, culture, and traditions. He said African immigrants are a high-achieving people, and he added that we have nothing but respect for you and we welcome you to our shores as visitors or as residents.
And France's President Emmanuel Macron is visiting London for a summit with UK Prime Minister Theresa May. The main topics of discussion will be the migrant crisis and fighting terrorism in Mali and the Sahel region. The UK is giving more money for extra security in France to discourage migrants from traveling to the Calais area. However, President Macron says Britain needs to do more. Catherine Field is covering the summit and spoke with me about Macron's expectations and the upcoming press conference later today that May and Macron will give.
Broadly speaking, President Macron wants the United Kingdom to really step up to the plate. He's been very annoyed with the United Kingdom holding back particularly help on terrorism and in particular on migration. When it comes to migration, he wants the United Kingdom to be more active in accepting these unaccompanied minors who have come to France from Africa, particularly the Sahel region, that the United Kingdom said they would accept all those unaccompanied minors. Well, there are 2,000 unaccompanied minors. They've only accepted 769 of them. So he wants a really firm agreement from Theresa May, the Prime Minister, that she will actually get people looking at these dossiers quickly. In return, the United Kingdom has offered to give more money for security at the Calais area in northern France. This is the area where a lot of the migrants go to in the hope of going over to Britain. Now, in particular, the UK is going to spend money on security there, more infrared detectors. What they're hoping then is that this area will not become a magnet for migrants wanting to get to the United Kingdom. And also President Macron wants more help in the Sahel region. He feels that all the problems in the Sahel, whether it be traffickers, whether it be jihadists, that this is only going to be solved if all of the nations, particularly within the EU and those nations in the African Union and the United Nations, get together and deal with this specifically as a team, because France cannot do the job of securing that region on its own.
Who else is at the summit?
It's a huge summit, really, for both countries. President Macron has taken 7 of his own ministers with him. And also, there are the heads of the 5 internal and external intelligence services from the United Kingdom and France. Now, what they're particularly going to be talking about is what lessons can be learned from the terrorist attacks in both the United Kingdom and in France. But also, again, looking at the Sahel region, you know, why are there so many security problems in this particular area? And they're also going to be reviewing Libya, because it's really been the chaos in Libya that has brought about so much of the migrant issues here in Europe. They're going to be looking at that, looking at what went wrong, looking at what they can do also to try and give more impetus to the so-called humanitarian corridors. That is, helping people who are already in Libya or who are in the Sahel region, who have a right to asylum in the European Union or in Britain, and to get that system really working again well.
Also, Macron and May are going to hold a press conference. What is going to be the subject of this press conference?
It's really what they're going to give a show of unity. They've already agreed more needs to be done for counterterrorism, more needs to be done for migration. that this is really a sign that there's going to be a unified Franco-British alliance. Emmanuel Macron, the French president, knows at the moment that he is the man on the international stage. With America, with President Donald Trump out of the picture when it comes to most sorts of multilateral initiatives, you've also got in Germany, still no government there more than 3 months after the election. So Emmanuel Macron is the man of the moment when it comes to international diplomacy. So if you like, in some ways, it's Theresa May jumping on his coattails, but also Emmanuel Macron standing there and saying, look, I am the one person in the world at the moment who is secure in his job and who is talking about a multilateral approach to the world's problems.
That was reporter Catherine Field. She spoke with me from Paris.
At least 12 people were killed yesterday in twin suicide bomb attacks in the northeastern Nigerian city of Maiduguri. VOA's Hausa Service reports the explosions struck the Muna Garage area of the Borno state capital, a market used largely by internally displaced persons from a nearby camp. According to Abdulkader Ibrahim, information officer for Nigeria's National Emergency Management Agency Northeast Zone, another 65 people were injured. He said that 4 female suicide bombers were responsible for the blast. No group immediately claimed responsibility for the attack.
Tanzania's government has deregistered an explosives-laden Libya-bound ship flying the country's flag when it was seized by Greek authorities earlier this month. The government says it will also take a closer look at ships being registered in the country. Mohammed Yusuf has the story from Nairobi with reporting by Khalid Abubakar in Dar es Salaam.
Speaking to reporters Thursday at the presidential palace, Tanzanian Vice President Samia Hassan said her government will revoke the license of the ship involved in transporting the explosives and another ship caught transporting cocaine. We are taking the first step to deregister these ships, and we are demanding them to pull down our flags from the ships so that they can face the law. Last week, Greek authorities intercepted the vessel carrying the explosives. The cargo papers showed the material were destined for Djibouti, but according to the reports, Greek inspectors found the cargo was bound for Libya. In 2011, the United Nations Security Council imposed an arms embargo on Libya. 3 weeks earlier, another ship flying the Tanzanian flag was intercepted in the Caribbean. The cargo tanker was carrying 1.6 tons of cocaine. Maritime expert Julius Nkuhula says vessels from the East African nation now will be a target. There is no problem registering ships in Tanzania or another country. It is a good business if it is handled well. Now, Tanzania will not be getting such businesses from ships because ships with Tanzanian flags will be targeted. It is up to maritime agencies to do something about it, like monitoring of all the ships. Vice President Hassan says the government will keep closer watch on ships being registered in the country. We have decided to review our laws. Some of these people are running away from their countries because they have strict laws. For us, we have decided to review and strengthen our laws so that we can nab those coming to register such vessels in our country. Tanzania is one of the 7 countries being investigated by the United Nations for violating arms embargo against North Korea. The U.S. has put pressure on Tanzania and 4 other African countries to stop allowing North Korean ships to fly their flags. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 19 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. President Uhuru Kenyatta's spokesman has warned opposition leader Raila Odinga not to carry through on threats to inaugurate himself as the people's president. 48 former U.S. ambassadors to African countries have sent a letter to the White House expressing deep concern over President Donald Trump's reported derogatory comments referring to African nations. And at least 12 people were killed yesterday in twin suicide bomb attacks in the northeastern Nigerian city of Maiduguri. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
African nations saw big political changes in 2017 with the departure of leaders who had been in office for decades. That change, however, obscured continuing trends of abuses of rights and civil liberties, said Human Rights Watch as it released its annual Global Human Rights Report today. From Johannesburg,
Africa doesn't take top billing in the latest roundup of global human rights concerns. That dubious honor goes to what Human Rights Watch calls the dangerous trend of intolerance and populist leadership in the United States, Russia, and China. But, says Human Rights Watch's Deputy Program Director Babatunde Olugboji, that doesn't mean the watchdog is taking its eye off Africa.
Women who have been raped, people who have been killed, people who have been arrested, people who have been detained, they're not going to be thinking about nuclear war in North Korea or in Hawaii or anywhere. They're going to be thinking of, my government has the responsibility to respect my right. My government has the responsibility to ensure that I enjoy these rights.
Olugboji and colleagues described concerns in West Africa, such as the bloody insurgency by Boko Haram, the crackdown on the English-speaking minority in Cameroon, and unrest in the Democratic Republic of Congo, which has repeatedly postponed elections. In East Africa, they noted clampdowns on dissent in Ethiopia and Tanzania, and concerns about election-related violence in Kenya, along with the continued war in South Sudan. Researchers, however, noted bright spots in Gambia and in Angola, where longtime leaders finally stepped aside and freedoms are slowly, possibly, growing. Angola researcher Zenaida Machado says that while things appear to be going well since longtime leader José Eduardo dos Santos retired in September, it's too soon to call the Southern African nation a success. She said most of the year was characterized by dos Santos's repressive leadership and his family's ever-increasing wealth.
It was an exciting period in Angola. It's been since September. But it's also important not to forget that the year was still there from January until September 2017 when changes began to be implemented or began to be seen. The majority of 2017 wasn't a good year for Angola.
Olugboji said that rights groups are reserving judgment about Zimbabwe, where the military forced President Robert Mugabe to resign in November after 37 years in power. Mugabe's longtime deputy, Emerson Mnangagwa, replaced him.
Not much has changed in Zimbabwe. There was this euphoria about Mugabe being pushed out, but when the dust settled, it became clear that these people that have been there forever, I bet again, nothing has changed. There are restrictive laws in the books. There are issues around freedom of expression. The press is not free. People cannot protest.
African governments, he says, may feel the heat is off them because of the world's bigger, louder, more controversial leaders. But, he says, Human Rights Watch is always observing. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
U.S. President Donald Trump will be among a record 70 heads of state or governments attending this year's World Economic Forum in the Swiss Alpine village of Davos. More than 3,000 participants from more than 110 countries will participate in this high-powered event between January 23rd and 26th. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
President Trump will be rubbing shoulders with hundreds of the world's most powerful and influential political and business leaders, heads of major international organizations, and civil society. The theme of this year's meeting, Creating a Shared Future in a Fractured World, aims to explore the growing divisions in the world order and seek solutions for healing this dangerous global rift. World Economic Forum founder Klaus Schwab says the nations are moving out of the global financial and economic crisis, but he warns that the world is stuck in a perilous social crisis, which will require an unparalleled global effort to overcome.
A second big issue in Davos will certainly be the future of global cooperation related to trade, environment, fight against terrorism, tax systems, competitiveness. And in this context, it's absolutely essential to have President Trump with us.
Schwab says Davos is a mirror of a multipolar world, reflecting the rising and promising power of developing or emerging countries. He notes that one-third of the participants at this year's meeting come from these nations. The importance of this new reality is seen in the choice of Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi, to deliver the opening address in Davos. India, the world's biggest democracy, also is the fastest-growing economy among the G20 countries. The leader of the most powerful country on earth, President Trump, will deliver a keynote address before the close of the four-day meeting. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Amid optimism of an economic recovery under the new government in Zimbabwe, food prices have been rising sharply, forcing many to cross the border into neighboring Botswana, where basic commodities are comparatively cheaper. Martin Ngwenya has details from Habarone, Botswana.
It is still early morning, but the Ramokwana-Plumtree border crossing between Botswana and Zimbabwe is already teeming with hundreds of Zimbabweans. They are preparing to cross into the neighboring country for what has become daily shopping trips. The recent price hikes in basic commodities has forced many to cross into Botswana to buy groceries. Zimbabwe has experienced a sharp spike in the price of most commodities in the last 2 months, blamed on the country's acute cash shortages. The price madness has seen Zimbabweans crossing to Botswana, where commodities are comparatively cheaper. Miss Pauline Banda is one of the many shoppers who travel from Bulawayo to Botswana's second city, Francistown, which is 200 kilometers away.
Yeah, we're forced to come to Botswana to buy some of the basic things like toiletries because of the high prices in our country.
Mostly, the Zimbabwean shoppers buy foodstuffs, including meat and other basic commodities, which, although available in their homeland, are out of reach of many. Mrs. Datenda Ndlovu, also from Bulawayo, says there is no option at the moment but to make the 400-kilometer round trip to Francistown.
The situation in Zimbabwe is very bad about prices. We are very worried because we cannot survive to buy in Zim. During Christmas, I had to cross over to Botswana to go and get some groceries. And this is all forex lost. People are having to go out of the country instead of spending money in Zimbabwe. You look at meat, is $14 a kg, while across the border, things are still reasonable.
A Zimbabwean economic analyst based in Habarone, Mr. Bright Sidube, says the government should move in and address the price hikes.
The new government is expected to have done something as regards the availability of basic commodities. People follow logic. If basic commodities are too expensive at home, they will actually cross to other countries. It is still a shame that people are still crossing over to Botswana and the like to buy basic commodities, some of them which are produced locally in Zimbabwe.
This week, Zimbabwe's finance minister, Mr. Patrick Chinamasa, ruled out imposing price controls to address the challenge. Instead, he says the government will continue to engage businesses with a view to finding a lasting solution. Reporting for VOA's English to Africa service, this is Martin Ngwenya in Habarone, Botswana.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Aiden Utko, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Mpoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA.